What's up, everybody? BC here. Another special episode and interview. We got my man Paulie over here.
BC with PC.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
you know, we've talked off camera a few times and chatted, and I figured it'd be good. You know, the dude has a ton of experience as far as getting transactions done and up and down markets, and I think he's a good person to interview that I think could give us a unique perspective, because most people like myself, you know, we're only in the business 5, 6, 7 years, so we haven't really been through anything like this, man. And welcome to the show, bro. I'm excited to talk to you a little bit and get your help.
Yeah. Well, you know, man, it's always important to mastermind with, you know, who you surround yourself with matters, and continuing good conversations, especially in a market like this where things are going to get worse before they get better. Continuing to have good conversations to figure out which direction that I'm going, and continuing to recalibrate is going to be important for everybody coming up here shortly.
Absolutely, man. Now, yeah. I know when we first chatted, you mentioned, you know, really starting your career and just really taking off during that last 2008 big crash. Can you talk about that a little bit? Yeah. Because that's huge, man. I think that kind of sets the stage for what we're going to talk about, because yeah. In spite of all that chaos, you were able to really shine. And I think that's
yeah. Important. Yeah. So I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's 2008. It's January 2008. I'd burned the bridge with my prior profession working on the Las Vegas Strip, working in gourmet restaurants, food serving. And it was awesome because it's Las Vegas. I'm waiting on Jordan and Kobe and Mayweather and famous, you know, Tom Hanks and anybody famous that you can think of. I'm drinking like unbelievable wine and eating unbelievable food, but the ground had already begun to shake in Las Vegas with us realizing that we were probably not going to be in a good place, recession, housing wise. All of this, the recession had begun to hit. Yeah. And I decided that I was going to go full time in real estate January 2008. Now I had already had my license prior to that, but I realized that you know, you ever know when you're done with something where you're just like,
yeah,
you're done, right? You're like, F that, I'm done, peace, I'm out. And that's where I was with working on the Strip. And so first year, 14 transactions, then 36, then 52, and then 52 to 129, 2008, 9, 10, and 11, my first 4 years in the business. And really, I had to not only learn to speak real estate, but learn to speak short sale, because back then in Vegas, I mean, almost 90% of the transactions were REO or short sales. And so if you didn't have an asset manager relationship where you were getting REO listings, yeah, you had to learn to speak short sale. And if you didn't work with investors, then you were out of the business. And I saw that, man. People who were in the business a long time have to leave the business because they weren't intentional about shifting with the market and yeah, figuring out, okay, what am I going to do? Because people are still going to buy and sell in markets like this.
Hell yeah, man. And you brought up some good points. So you early on, was there any specific adjustments you made going into it? Because I'm sure you had a hunch. You had already kind of seen that the market was about to, you know, topple over, or maybe you didn't, but you obviously pivoted quickly. Was there anything, two or three things that maybe you adjusted with very quickly or saw that allowed you to make that move and actually still prosper during that time?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of work, you know. So I coach a lot of agents. I mean, you know, I do a lot of coaching nationally, and so one of the cool things about coaching is hearing about what's going on around the country, and in Las Vegas, because Las Vegas is an international city, a lot of word comes in from other cities and even other countries, and so paying attention to what's happening with the conversations around you nationally, especially, is was part of me figuring out, okay, what am I going to do? And so once we realized that there was a shift coming and that it looked like things were going to collapse, I immediately figured out, okay, I need to be prospecting asset managers. And I was a little late to that game. Mm-hmm. There was already people who were had their ear to the ground closer on doing that sooner. And man, I knew agents who were average everyday Joe agents who were millionaires because they were at the right time at the right place, creating the right relationships. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you right now, one of the things that I do differently right now, because with wherever you're at, and this doesn't have to be a debate on how deep we're going to go or how bad things are going to get. But look, here's what's going to happen. Cities like Las Vegas are going to be impacted differently than where I'm at right now in Austin, Texas, where look, there's going to be some foreclosures. That small businesses are in trouble, man. People are losing their jobs. And so we got to, you know, May, June, July, those are going to be tough months for us. So maybe figuring out, and I'm definitely not that expert, but figuring out how to establish relationships with asset managers to see how you might get even a foot in that game. Because even if that was a supplement of like one or two transactions extra a month, I mean, that could be the difference between surviving or you know, being out of the business.
Yeah, absolutely, so, man. 100%.
Yeah.
Do you right now, having that experience and going into what we're going into right now, is there anything that comes to your mind right away about any similarities you see or any glaring differences between 2008 and what we're running into now?
You know, I think that, I'm doing this mastermind around a shifting market, and I'm having flashbacks, man, because I'm remembering some of the things that I had to do to shift and realizing that, okay, asset manager game didn't work out. REOs wasn't going to work out. So I had to learn to speak short sale. And I got my certification in that. I started hustling short sales. But really understanding that I was going to have to double or triple my efforts. Now, I was already prospecting 3 or 4 hours a day. I was hitting 36 contacts a day, man. I had the numbers analyzer. I knew exactly what my numbers were. I was, you know, you and I follow similar models as far as once we started off on how we were prospecting, the scripts that we were using, because I did my homework. And I realized once I resourced people who were already successful that this game was simple. It just wasn't easy. Okay, I just got to go out there and create conversations. Now, these were different conversations around short sales, but the similarities in this market is, look, people are still going to buy and sell real estate. Yeah. I'm just going to have to probably increase my efforts. I'm going to 2x it or 3x it or 4x it. For some of you guys, you need to 10x it because you ain't doing nothing. You need to 10x your efforts to get out there and create conversations with people who are nines and tens. Because the nines and tens, they're still going to move, yep. Right? They're still going to buy and sell. Investors, how am I focused on creating investor relationships? Because they're not going to move until they starting to feel like they're at bottom. And we could be 3 to 6 months out of understanding, you know, where that is. But hey, how about starting to establish those relationships now? And the more conversations that I can create, the more opportunity that's going to provide for me, because it's still going to happen. Is it going to be harder? Yes. The differences in this market, though, is understanding how is this, you know, back in the housing market, a crisis when things were happening, you can still go to the movies. You can still go get a drink at the bar. You know, you could get out there and how this is going to impact things. I think we're all kind of in this freeze of like, what's going on and how's this going to impact us?
Yeah. Cause I don't know how it is where you're at. Cause you moved to Austin here in LA for about 2 weeks. We couldn't do anything. Any new listing that you had put up, you had to put on hold. We weren't allowed to list property. We're still not allowed really to show homes much. And we have to do like virtual tours. We can't do open houses. So we're very limited with the activities. Is it like that where you're at in Austin right now too?
Yeah, it is very similar. I know some of the cities are tighter on restrictions than others. Austin's a little bit looser. They were tight and then they loosened, and the governor, the state principalities and the locals were kind of going back and forth with it. But it's very similar to LA as far as they're strongly discouraging. You could possibly show a property, but you know, there's this cloud of anxiety where everybody's kind of holding back and figuring out what's going on. And for agents, especially new ones, because look, in the housing crisis, when the economic recession hit back in 08 and 09 and 010, if I was able to double and then triple and then hit 100 by my fourth year, people can do the same in this business, but they're going to have to take massive action to figure out, okay, how can I connect with these people? Because the opportunity is going to be there.
Absolutely, man. You know, one thing you brought up was investors. Was there anything specifically you were doing to create those relationships? Because I have a huge book of investors now that I've met with and built relationships with over the years. And I think a lot of people, when they hear investor, they want to run the other way. What were some things that you did to really forge those relationships and find good investors?
I'll tell you, I got, I almost said I got lucky, but at the moment of opportunity, when preparation meets opportunity, that's called luck, right? And so I was cold calling, and I was just cold calling my face off because I'm not from Vegas. I'm from New York, right? Yeah. And so I didn't have a good sphere of influence. I worked on the Strip, and that necessarily isn't the greatest database to have. People are blowing their money left and right in places they shouldn't be blowing their money.
Yeah.
And so, so I had to cold call. I didn't like it as much as anybody else. And I had a sticky note. It was one of those, you know, those little tiny stickies. I got a big black fat, Sharpie, and I created big fat letters, and I colored them in with black, and I taped it to my phone, and it said, "Pick me up." because I had just as much apprehension as anybody else. Cause people have this stereotype that they think I'm the cold call cowboy. Cause I willed myself into the skill set of being able to become a more powerful communicator. But through that cold calling, I began to run into investors. And then, you know what I did, dude? I'll this is a little tip. I don't know if this is still possible, but I went to Title and I pulled a list of non-owner properties from Vegas. So non-owner occupied, right? Out of state. But I told Title, I go, I want people who are out of state. Because I knew that, okay, either they were second homeowners or they were investors, right? And sure enough, man, those conversations were so much easier to have because I'm boots on the ground. They're in New York. They're in Florida, Cali, whatever. And they're like, so what's up? What's going on? And now it's just up to me to create a better conversation. But I was circle prospecting, and I don't remember this little tiny neighborhood in Vegas. I meet this little substitute teacher. I short sale her house, $55,000. Short sale. Took me 6 months to close it. I probably made $500, right?
Wow.
Now, here's a lesson. Money's everywhere, right? Money's everywhere. So she introduces me to her mom. Her mom owns the school where she substitute teaches. Okay, I'm moving up the ladder now. I short sold her house for $250 or whatever, right? Probably a $500,000 or $700,000 house. I short sold for $250. Her son calls me a year later. Right. And I wasn't even that good at staying in touch with my database. And her son calls me and goes, hey, my mom says you're a realtor. She says you're really great. I work with an investor. We're looking for someone to work with down in the next couple of weeks. So I go down there. I'm like, cool, man. I'm going to work with an investor, courthouse steps. This is going to be awesome. Because that week, I closed 52 transactions and I was prepping my resume to go back on the strip because I wasn't making dirt, right? Like $108,000 price point in Vegas. Now, remember at that time, REOs and short sales were a majority of the market. So they were only giving 2% commission at that time. So 2% commission on $108,000 property.
$2,000.
Yeah. Dude, not a lot. I know after splits and costs, you ain't making, it takes you 6 months to close the deal. They recruit me to work on the, to take short sale listings. Cause at the time you could get short sales for 5, 7, 10% below market value. Investors were swooping in. He becomes my business partner. Long story short, that's when business exploded, but, staying open to the activities, stay committed to the process. One of my guys in Vegas on my team, he used to always chant this to the newbies on my team. He'd tell the new guys, stay committed to the process, stay committed to the process, stay committed to the process, because money's everywhere and you don't know where a $55,000 little short sale turns into $1 million investor and now your business has 10x'd. Yeah. You just don't know where the money is, man.
Yeah, man. That's huge. So, obviously, you willed yourself, you mentioned earlier, to making calls, and you've brought up skill set a lot, which I do too. Was there anything in particular you did during those times to really, you know, if you could, rapidly increase your skills? Because I know skills pay the bills, we know that, but everybody runs away from that, bro. I don't know why, but is there any words of enlightenment you can give them for that specifically? Because you got to beat them over the head, bro, literally with this.
Dude, everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to die.
Yeah, right.
You know, everybody wants to make $1 million, but nobody wants to do the work, right? Yeah, right. And so once I had done my diligence on, okay, what do the successful people in this business do? How do they do it? Okay, they talk to a lot of people. They create a lot of conversations. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, I better get, I better talk to a lot of people and I better have really good conversations. Now, keep in mind, when I had decided to go full time, 2008, January, literally, I had probably about a month and a half of money in the bank to pay my bills, right? Now my wife, I got a 5-year-old and I got a 2-year-old, right? My wife's Puerto Rican. Okay. So like, if I don't bring home the bacon, like it's about to get real, right? And so, and I'm Latin and I'm Italian, right? So like, I realize I'm in jeopardy here. Like my life's in danger. Like I got to get rolling. So I did this, dude. I stopped listening to music for 18 months.
Wow.
Now I'm the kind of guy who I always got music going on. I got hip hop, I got rock and roll, Frank Sinatra. I'll even listen to opera. Dude, I listen to everything. Yeah. I always got music going on. And for me to not listen to music was huge. So I made the sacrifice and realized that, if I'm gonna survive this, I'm gonna have to go into hyperdrive. Tony Robbins talks about taking massive action, right? And I'm like, okay, no music, I'm driving, I'm listening to, you know, at the time I was listening to Mike Ferry Role Plays, right? Because we didn't, dude, 2008, 9, YouTube wasn't like it is now, right? Like,
no.
I had to go beg somebody for tapes.
Yeah.
This is 2008, and I'm asking somebody for tapes. Hey, dude, let me get your Mike Ferry tapes so I can listen to those listing presentations and objection handling. Yeah. You know, Tom was with Mike at the time, and he did some pretty cool objection handling stuff. And Matt Ferry, you know, there was some pretty awesome stuff there. And I was doing role play every day with guys across the country, some of them very popular guys now on YouTube even, where we were role playing every single day. And I was role playing listing presentations every day. I'd be in my car and I'd be reciting the scripts. And I even had a clipboard. And I had a clipboard and I'd have the scripts on my clipboard at the listing presentation. And I'd be like, Mr. Seller, I'm going to ask you a few questions before we get started. And I had the pre-qual script right there. Right. But then I had the actual listing presentation and the objection handler is right behind it. So I had already set the precedence that I'm going to be looking at my script board, but I was looking at my scripts while I was there because damn it, I'm freaking taking this listing. It's going to mean life or death for me. And for a lot of these guys, like your skill set is going to mean life or death in the next 12 months.
Dude, huge, man. You know, I'm laughing so hard hearing that because I still have over here in this closet all the CD sets that I got from Mike Ferry in like 2013 when I signed up for the coaching, dude.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I would ride in my car, I had recorded all of the scripts on like a CD at the time, and I put it in my car, and as I was driving, I would just hear that all the time, dude.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, it's just obsession, bro, like really obsessing about it. Now, you know, one thing that I'm also seeing with people is they think, well, that sounds good, Paulie, but I'm either, and this is how they think, which I believe is incorrect, and you can touch on it a little bit. They think they either have to have the skills and be the hardcore salesman, but if they do that, they can't also simultaneously build relationships. And I've been trying to shatter that bubble and burst that bubble because I believe I might have started out being too aggressive, we can say, but I really learned, me too, right? Mm-hmm. Right away, within 2 or 3 months, I made that shift to really build my relationships too. Can you talk about that, dude? Because I feel like people feel like they have to choose either or, like be the good salesman or back off completely and just build relationships.
Yeah, yeah. You either have to be Mike Ferry or Tom Ferry, right? Like you're a hardcore salesman or you're like friendly guy who pops by and drops off pumpkins once a month. Right? and you know what, dude, I'm so glad you say that because I work pretty diligently with the coaching and training that I do to talk about the fact that actually you need both, right? You have to have skills because if you're all sunshine and rainbows and you're just trying to be the friend, you're going to be along for the ride and you're not in control. And certainly that's not attributes of leadership and you won't be efficient. And certainly you can't be more effective, especially in a market that like what's coming up, there's going to be a lot of pain. But the thing that cost me in my first 3 years, because I was like, Mike Ferry scripts, like just focus on the scripts. And I'm super high D personality, right? So I was like, hell yeah, like this is it. Like this is all, I'm all about this. So I'll tell you a story. 3 years into my business, right? I'm at 52 transactions. I'm like, maybe I should start paying attention to my database. Like, man, it'd be nice if people would call me and like want to list their home with me instead of like pounding my heads against expireds all day long. So me and my assistant, he pulls up all my database and I go, okay, let me start calling these people. So I get in there and I start making phone calls. And after a course of a couple days, and it was about a week, I realized, dude, I had tracked almost $100,000 in verifiable commissions that went elsewhere because I didn't touch base with them. Brian, wow. I was lunging over my desk and I almost threw up. I almost freaking threw up because I was so focused on just the skill set of, okay, find new business. But the matter of the fact is like, I have to, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Everybody's heard that, right? But like, okay, what does that look like though for me to just reach out to my database and go, yo, what's up? How are you? Are you okay? Yeah. Is everything all right? I care about you. What's going on? And to me, because I was so D, I'm like, dude, I don't want to have coffee with everybody. I don't want to go to lunch with everybody, but you don't have to. But you do have to connect with them and go, how are you? What's happening?
Yeah.
And I think there's a huge gap with that in our industry where people are way right or they're way left. And the matter of the fact is that right in the middle, that's the sweet spot, man, because all of the mega agents, dude, they got tons of repeat and referral business going on. But here's what they're doing. They're tracking their numbers, accountability at a high level. They're following scripts on strategically engaging conversations. They're working on their objection handlers because your database is still going to go, I don't want to list at that price.
Yeah.
Your database is still going to go, look, let's submit lowball offers.
Yeah,
right. And so what is my ability to be a more powerful communicator for their benefit to be able to maneuver through the resistance and help people get to where they want to go? And then that's just more efficiency.
Yeah, I love that, man. Is there anything you're doing? Because obviously now in 2020, you have really embraced social media and you're doing your thing. Are you using anything tactically via social media right now to kind of position yourself for what's coming or to really give you a competitive advantage?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, hey, like right now, right? Like everybody's at home.
Yeah.
So if agents are getting real, if you haven't figured out that, okay, hey, maybe I should really start figuring out like what to do with social media. And you know, yeah, I love this, dude. Agents are like, oh, I'm not that good with video. So you're just not good talking to people? Like what? Get that out of your, if you're uncomfortable putting yourself in a scenario where you have to talk to people, you're never going to break out of doing 6 or 10 transactions a year.
Yep.
Maybe that's okay for you and you're all right with that. And you got sugar daddy or you, whatever else is going on where you don't have to make that money. But the matter of the fact is most people, if you're not doing at least a couple deals a month, you're not going to make it.
Yep.
You're not going to make it. So it's we're in interesting times, man.
Dude, I know. And I keep hearing that, you know, like that's the first thing I said, like the first YouTube video I ever made, you need to do video because this is the future. And I have people, bro, I've been following you for 6 years. I'm still too fucking scared to make a video. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
I've been doing for 6 years.
What are you doing? I think right now is definitely an important time to figure out how can I take incremental steps? And there's so much stuff already out there that on YouTube, you don't have to pay for anything. You can. There's so many people modeling and consulting, training on how can you be better at getting in front of people for pennies on. Dude, Facebook, and I don't know, I was never a huge social media guy and I'm just moderate at it right now because I haven't platformed my coaching and training at a high level because I have my hands in other buckets too. And I just love to coach and train. I'm passionate about bringing value to people and helping people. But social media is pennies on the dollar. You could possibly 10 or 15 years ago get in front of as many eyeballs in any other forum like you can with Facebook. And my wife brought up a good point. I don't know the validity of this. She's like, you know, I saw something around, look, when these big companies begin to migrate from TV back over to social media, it's not going to be like this.
No.
Like advertising at some point, social media wise, is going to improve. So people need to be getting their nut now. And figuring out like how do I build a database of 300, 500, 1,000 people that are solid so that I can have a something to be able to resource for years.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree. And I'm glad you brought that up because I remember even telling the people around me in 2014 and 15, I'm like, dude, celebrities are sleeping right now. Why aren't they making a YouTube channel? They would blow up overnight. And now you see. I think like Will Smith made his channel and within like a week, he had like 1 million subscribers, right?
Yeah.
And it's so huge, dude. And people forget that and they're taking it for granted. But when it's flooded with them, they're just going to complain like they were before. Instead of making videos and them being scared, it's going to be, well, I can't do it now because ads are too expensive.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the things that really, really made me pay, because I saw you early and then something that kept me keeping my eye on you was how committed you were to just remain, staying committed to the process, right? Like, dude, you just stuck at it and you were right time, right place, providing the right content. And here's the thing. It's never too late. There's always room at the top. There's more sheep than shepherds. Right? So you just got to get off your ass and get to work and do what needs to be done because the magic pill is consistency and hard work. I mean, that's it.
Love it, bro, man. So thanks for doing this, dude. I know we're going to keep talking, man. Obviously, these interviews are always good, 25, 30 minutes. Is there anything, bro, because I know you mentioned coaching, training. I know you got your YouTube channels. Anything you want to plug here at the end before we wrap up?
Yeah, man. I mean, check out Coach Paulie C on my Facebook and YouTube channel. I'm always coming from, so my wheelhouse is power of communication. Like how can I be a more powerful communicator? Because regardless of where you get your leads in our business, it's a relationship-based business, right? So, we know that, but, it's about how often are you in conversation with people and how good are those conversations? And at the end of the day, regardless of where your leads come from, I have to be better at talking to people. I have to be better at creating, not waiting, for good conversations. And when that happens, because so many agents are just sitting back and they're waiting for a good conversation at the open house, on the expired or FSBO call, circle prospecting, even talking to people at a barbecue. Like they hear somebody say something and like they're waiting for this opportunity to occur versus being intensely and curious about the person in front of you. And when you're intensely curious and you just ask good questions, I call it the QA. Who, what, when, where, how, why around a situation or their motivation. And that just inevitably creates a good conversation. And you don't have to be salesy. Yeah. Like that close is coming if you just create and stay in a good conversation by being curious and asking good questions. Then people know, they feel it here, right? And then you can move them here by asking those questions to close them or to move them forward or create a next best step.
Love it, bro. Well, thank you for doing this, bro. Really appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thank you. And maybe we'll we'll do some role play or something, and we'll do something fun and rock and roll.
Hell yeah. Coming in the future. All right. Yeah, thanks, man. Bro.
Yeah.